Bowery Capital Startup Sales Podcast.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Thanks for listening. This week, we're going to be covering culture and how to simplify it into being intentional, documenting it, rewarding for it, and then how to have ownership over it. Second, we're going to talk about ramping employees in that first 90 days from a cultural aspect. So why it's important and how to think through actually doing that. And then lastly, we're going to talk about mission and margin. So it's kind of a catchphrase, but it's thinking through how to move really, really fast at this VC pace and still pursue excellence and accountability, but also really caring for your people, your employees, and your customers in an authentic way that sometimes can feel overlooked in the startup world. We're lucky to be joined by Brendan Tollison this week. He's the CEO and co-founder of Rev Partners. So he's an awesome person to talk to about this. It's a fully remote org. They've gone from 0 to 3 million in ARR just in a year. Last year, they went from 2 to 30 employees and they just raised a round. So, you know, talk about that fast VC pace and how he thinks about balancing that as a leader. And then even before that, he's been a revenue leader at several different VC-backed tech companies. One of them being Tricentis. Got to see them go from 3 to over 100 million in ARR, tons of phases of growth. And then Suniva, so a renewable energy company. He actually built the partnerships and channels team there. So long story short, he's been a part of, built, and led many different teams across a few different companies. So talking about culture and how he thinks about it in a remote aspect, it's going to be really exciting. So let's do it. Brendan, thanks so much for coming on the show. Good morning. How you doing, man?
Good, Eugene. Thanks for having me. I'm a big fan of the podcast. And so it's fun to be on this side as a guest, as opposed to just a listener.
Yeah, there you go. You got the spotlight today.
I don't love the spotlight, but I will embrace it for this next 30 minutes or however long this this recording goes.
Yeah. There you go. Well, I just walked everybody through your background. And one of the topics I wanted to dive into was just how you think about being a leader and really building up the company in this remote world.
Yeah, it's look, I don't have to convince people all the importance of culture. So I think we don't have to necessarily focus on that aspect. Yep. But here's the reality and the caveat to what I'm about to share is I only know how to build a business in a distributed environment. So Rev Partners started during COVID. So we never had a physical office. So we've had to solve for this from day one. And a lot of companies are, you know, we're still kind of figuring out how you build it, what rhythms you create to protect and preserve culture. But I think they're kind of, if I were to kind of distill it down from our context and what we've seen, is there's really four contributing factors for how we think about protecting and preserving culture. There's one, it has to be intentional. Two, it has to be documented. Three, it has to be rewarded. And four, there has to be ownership to it. As a CEO, to your point, as a leader, I ultimately own the culture. But at the same time, it needs to be a shared responsibility and people need to feel like they have a voice and own it as well. But when we think about how do we create it and then ultimately protect it, it falls into those four key buckets I just mentioned.
Got it. One of my favorite things personally is like simplifying things down. So it's like easy to distill and understand. It sounds like you've done exactly just that. Yeah, I'd love to go a little bit deeper. So when you think about culture, one is it needs to be intentional. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, when you're in a distributed context, naturally it requires more effort. You're not physically with people and you're not able to have those day-to-day interactions in a physical context. And so how do you create these rhythms that ensure you have a similar type of experience, even in a distributed environment? Like, look, there are great aspects of distributed, meaning you can acquire talent anywhere in the world, really, not just domestically. So that's a benefit of it, but also how do you make sure that people feel connected? How do you make sure that people feel like they are a part of something and not just some type of contractor that's kind of in their own little world? And so that requires, in my mind, that's the whole, how do you be thoughtful and how you approach it and the rhythms that you generate to ultimately create that culture that you ultimately want as an organization.
Yeah, that's so good. I feel like in the office environment, you have things like in-person get-togethers or happy hours, you have water cooler talk, and then we transitioned through COVID and everybody's like, oh, we just need to do a Zoom happy hour once a week and we're good. And that clearly isn't and wasn't the answer. Do you have any examples of things you've either seen or you're doing that you really like that maybe aren't just the Zoom happy hour?
Yeah, I mean, there are a few things. I have a whole rhythm document that we've created, so you know, intentionality. Nice. So that gets back into documentation. But in terms of, I would say, and this is actually from one of our teammates, and so he suggested, hey, I really want to create an environment, not necessarily a happy hour, but an opportunity for me to get to know people on our team. And so what we've implemented is a virtual coffee. And so every week you get matched up. I don't know what app we use for this. Let's get some technology. But there's an app we use that matches, auto-populates and puts you together with somebody. And it requires you to have it's not a big burden, but it's 15 minutes of, we're not talking about anything about work. This is about getting to know you. And so there is that rhythm that we create where I get to meet somebody new every week that I, not necessarily new, but you get the point, a different person, just to build that relationship, that water cooler, if you will, that you don't necessarily get to experience. We also have a policy in our first 90 days where every new hire has to meet everybody. And so that's also built into it. So it's, you get to know the team. And so we have, of course, formal business meetings, but we also need to have the relational side so that you build that trust that ultimately comes from a relationship. Because at the end of the day, we provide a service as a service provided by a team. And that team has to have a relationship built on trust if they want to execute well and deliver a good customer experience. So that'd be one example.
Yeah. Can you expand on that second part? I think that's really awesome, especially at your size. Like, you should meet everybody on the team within the first 90 days. Is that also 15-minute coffee at a minimum, or is there more structure around that?
Yeah. So we have a whole... this kind of transition to documentation a little bit, but we use technology. So we use a tool called ClickUp from a PM perspective, and we've used it in a variety of ways. One, in terms of how we deliver for our customers, but also how we think about our onboarding experience. And so everything is documented in terms of understanding our mission, vision, values, as well as just getting the opportunity to, hey, who have you met with, and who else is on your list to do in these next kind of, it's essentially a project plan. How that scales, I'll be able to answer that in a year from now. Because when we're 30 people, it is somewhat manageable in a 90-day period to meet with everybody. When we get to be 100 plus people, that gets a little bit more challenging. We'll figure out how to make that consumable or at least achievable. But that's the intent: is you have 15 minutes, get to know people, understand who they are and what their role is. I would say that first 90 days is more about where they fit in the organization and how they can support them, what their experience is, what culture means to them. And so this gets to the point of, I am responsible for culture, but I don't necessarily own culture. Our team, I tell especially new hires at this stage, it's like, you contribute to our culture and you should feel ownership of it. And you should feel like you get to influence, impact what that looks like as we scale. And so it's important for them to speak into that and give their experience and their perspective.
Got it. And then how does that manifest itself in the documentation? So you have like a project plan, essentially. Is that everything you need to do during your ramp? Or is that like a specific, hey, we're intentional about culture and here's the steps and here's what we're doing for it?
It's a mix of both. It's a 90-day onboarding experience. And so, there's a front heavy portion around kind of the mission, vision, culture, getting to know the team. And then it's kind of getting into, what are your job, based off of the scope of what you're expected to do. Like, here are certifications, for example, that you need to get. Here are the different training. Like, we have it's a very robust training of at 30 days, you need to have this done. At 60 days, this done. At 90 days, there's a graduation. And you have to finish the graduation in order to be out of onboarding. So that's how we think about from a process perspective.
I feel like that might be quite rare for an org your size to be so intentional about it, have such a process around it. Is that something you thought about from day one? Was it because we're remote? It's just, your thoughts on what's important for a company, period. Like, why so intentional about this so early on?
Yeah, well, a lot of the credit goes to my team, not to me. As Andrew Leiden, our CEO head delivery, would be first to point out, I may have a lot of ideas on how I want to build, but as it relates to thinking two steps ahead of what all the different steps, that's why he's here, because he's really good at it. And so, I think for us, it was, when we were starting, we said, let's not think about just today, let's think about the future. And how do we create systems and processes that enable us to scale in a distributed context? And if there's not clarity and expectations aren't set up front, then it's really hard for someone to understand what their role, responsibility is, and what defines success. And so if we can, everybody likes a process, everybody likes to understand what the benchmarks are and how they're going to be measured. And so we just try to create that type of that type of system, if you will, in our delivery motion. And again, I mean, at the end of the day, we're providing a service to our customers. And if we don't have that set up well, then there's no way we're going to be able to serve them well. And so it's somewhat of a forcing function of, if we expect, like, the things that we can control as an organization are how we treat our people and how we treat our customers. And if we don't treat our people well, then ultimately they're not going to be able to serve our customers well.
Got it. Yeah. So everybody is aligned on the end goal of serving your customers the best you can. And the way you do that is through a tight culture where everybody's ramped and enabled and feels part of it, feels part of the mission. So that's worth the time you spend, maybe more than other companies at the similar stage of, we need to be intentional about this and spend time and resources to make sure we get this right. Otherwise, the end goal doesn't happen. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. It creates leverage. I think it's the way we would consider it. And it increases our, for us, using our terminology from a service perspective, and get into like utilization. And so if we do that first 90 days really well, then it allows our people to be more efficient and effective in the field.
Awesome. You mentioned reward as part of the four. What do you mean by reward in this?
Yeah, there's a saying, and I don't know who's the originator of it, but I will use it. It's what's rewarded is repeated. And so when we think about actions and behaviors, we should reward the action behaviors that we want and that we like. And so that's what if people see it, they're going to do it. And so one of the things that we've done, just to make it a practical example, is there's a great tool for your audience. If they don't use a tool called Bonusly, it has been a fantastic tool for us. So Bonusly is a way to gamify, and we've created a Slack channel. So we have our values, and we have other things that we create like metrics around, but essentially it allows us to reward people in the organization who are displaying a value or who have done a certain thing that we think is important. And those Bonusly, they become points, and those points translate to rewards. It could be money, like a gift card or something of that nature. And so what we found is when we create that type of structure, it reinforces what we think is important, and it indicates to people what we are going to say is valuable. And so we own that as leaders to make that clear. And then we try to create mechanisms in which people want to actually act on it.
Okay. That's so good. Cause I imagine there's two parts to really reinforcing this culture. One is you got to hire the right people. So there's probably part of your interview process. I'd love for you to talk to me how you view that and how maybe you test for that. And then once they're on board, it's this clear ramping structure, it's documented, and then we're actually reinforcing it through behavioral economics. And that's how you're going to scale the thing, right?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, that's probably a whole other podcast in terms of hire. It's very much documented. This is what happens at this call. Here's the desired outcome. Here's what we're like, your expectation for whoever's doing the interview. Here's what your role is and what we expect you to come out of it. And here's what the candidate has to do. So there's like skills, competency, role play. And then we get into culture fit, and culture fit's usually the end of it. But there are different, we treat recruiting and staffing just like we treat a sales engagement. There are different stages with different stage gates and different reasons for what they had to do in those. And so because it's the same concept. And then similarly in a sales engagement, how do you, just like you want to retain a customer, how do you retain your people? And so that's kind of how we think through it.
Yep. We'll have to get you back for another full separate podcast. We probably talked for like hours on recruiting. It's one of my most passionate topics.
Oh, great.
Lastly, you talked about ownership and specifically, you're the CEO, but it's not that you specifically own this. There's like an empowerment and ownership across the company. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I think you own it. You set the tone in terms of what you view as important and what is accepted and what's not. And there's also an accountability to that. Like if you aren't following those, hey, here's what we value, and your actions are inconsistent with your words, then that's a problem. And so I think there is that reality in terms of what the leadership's supposed to do, but there's also, I mean, in my mind, it's, especially as we scale, I can't be in every meeting. I don't manage everybody. And so I also need to make sure not just from a top down, but from a bottoms up, that the organization, specifically our people, are bought in and that they are protecting and preserving the culture and actually making it better. And so a practical example of this is we have our values, but then we have operating principles. And so our operating principles are tucked into each value. Those are not dynamic. Those are static, meaning those are our values and that's our DNA. But at the same time, we have operating principles, which are the behaviors that we want to see. Those are dynamic. And our team speaks into those and saying, hey, we're already bought into the values. That was part of the kind of recruiting process. But like, what are the different operating principles that we should be adapting and be evolving as we continue to grow? And so they speak into that. They help help us understand what we need to do as a team in terms of our rhythms, our cadences, how we deliver. Like that is on them to help us think through, and they feel that shared ownership. And the other reality that we've built into that is, you know, so we expect our teammates to feel ownership or to act like owners, then they need to be owners. And so we have an equity plan where all of our teammates have access to equity. So we all win together. And then when you create that type of environment, then there's buy-in.
Brent, I'm curious, when you think about building culture, who do you think is more responsible for shaping the culture and owning the culture? Is it people that have been at the company the longest, or maybe newer folks that are coming in and new to the org and eager and driven?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think there's, you know, look, there's a reality as you grow, you can get somewhat complacent. And complacency may is the wrong word, but there are rhythms that you just get accustomed to. And one of the beauties as you continue to grow is you bring in new voices that have different thoughts or opinions that want to insert, that insert energy and inserts creativity. And so we've experienced that even at our stage. I mean, we have people that have come in and I talked about at one point talking about operating principles or different rhythms we have in this organization. And this gets back to like equal opportunity to speak into that. Some of the things we do from a rhythm perspective are informed by what our new teammates have said, like, hey, we've done this at our past company. It was really successful and we want to incorporate it here. So for example, a bonus that I talked about where we have the gamification to reward behaviors, that wasn't my idea. I know I wanted to do it, but I had no way, I didn't know how to actually enforce it or operationalize it. And so we had one of our new teammates at the time, Brian, said we had this great tool that we use. How about we bring it in here? We looked at it and said, hey, that's great. And let's start incorporating it. It's been one of the more successful things we've done. So that's just a small example, but this idea of like people come with ideas and like we should empower that and listen to it and adopt it if and when it makes sense.
Got it. I love that. The next topic I wanted to jump into was mission and margin. So when you think about every company, especially VC backed, right? People are trying to move so fast and achieve so much. And it's almost like at what cost, either to the business or to employees. So I'm just trying to think through the balance of, you know, really pursuing excellence at its highest level, but also caring for your people, your customers, you know, things in that realm.
Yeah, it sounds contradictory, doesn't it? Or not contradictory, yeah. But hard. And I think for, right. And that's the world that I've grown up in my professional career, you know, high growth, VC backed, win at all costs, winner take all type of mindset. And I, in a lot of ways, I like that. Like, if I'm being honest, like I really am competitive. I want to win. I played college sports. And so I have that like natural desire. But it's also really exhausting. And it really turns people more into transactions than humans. And so what we, as I kind of sat back and as Matt, co-founder, and I were thinking through, okay, if we're going to do this, how do we embrace this tension where we pursue excellence, but we also love people well? And that is really, really hard. And so we said, we're just going to embrace the tension and figure out how to do it well, knowing we're going to fail, probably fail often, but let's like pursue that. And I think, you know, if you look at like a big topic is like the war on talent and talking about recruiting and retaining people. And it's a really important topic. But I think, you know, as we think about how we face that question and thinking about the mission and margin concept, if you look at kind of the data, like why people want to stay in an organization. And this is something that Hortz Schultze he talks a lot about. Hortz is the founder and former CEO of Ritz-Carlton and started Capella. So like number one in service in their category. When people are asked like what they're looking for in a job, money was actually number seven. And so oftentimes people think that money is the driver. And while it is important, and while we talk about margin, like we have to make money, we have to be profitable, we want to grow. But there's more than just the monetary side of it. And so there's this idea of how, for us, it's like, how do we invite people into purpose and how do we empower them? And so when we think about like even one of our mission statements, when I say statements, we talk about unlocking latent potential. And what all that's really saying is we all have, like, how do we empower our people to become a better version of who they are? Like they have unknown potential inside of them and we want to come alongside them and grow them and challenge them, stretch them, support them. And so that's a lot of what we think about. Because I told you earlier in the podcast, we can control two things, is our people and our customers. And so we are very focused on how do we, you know, take care of our people. And we, again, we do fail quite a bit, but that's the intention of that mission and margin.
It's interesting to hear where money ends up on that ranking of seven. Like my, most of my background is sales. I know you've had a long career in sales as well. So it's like your assumption may be money's got to be the top. A lot of salespeople are coin operated, right? But if you build a culture where you're trying to hire smart people that really care about development and working towards a mission, and then you deliver on that, you're actually developing them and caring for them and, you know, still holding them accountable, but from a place of empathy and love. Like they're not going to leave for a 1% or 5% pay bump somewhere else because this is their home. This is where they're making their career better. Am I hearing you right there?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, at the end of the day, like we're not hiring mercenaries. There's always going to be somebody that can bid more than us or whatever. I mean, whatever company you're at, by and large, there's always going to be a better opportunity from a monetary perspective. And at some point, like, yes, you need to be at a certain threshold from a monetary perspective. Like I'm not arguing that. But the point is like there's more that people care more about than just the actual dollars and cents. And so if you can create an environment, a culture where they feel that empowerment, they feel like they're part of something bigger than themselves, that motivates them, that gets them excited, that carries a lot of weight. In fact, it carries, you know, more weight according to the data than just the check they receive on a bi-monthly basis.
Yeah. I mean, you've had such an incredible career through different organizations. Is there a place or a time in your career outside of Rev Partners where maybe you felt that the most and you were just like loving it despite whatever hardships were going on?
So much of my experience has been influenced or impacted by who I worked with or worked for. And so, you know, there's always the glitz and glamour of, hey, we've raised this much money and like there's the sexy logos and that's always really fun. But then if I think back through like the different kind of tours of duty that I've had at different shops. I mean, it's really the people. When you first asked that question, I thought about two people specifically, and I didn't think about the company. And so for me, like I got my start in sales at, renewable energy company called Suniva, that was VC backed, had $150 million behind it. And I reported to, you know, probably the best sales leader that I've ever had. His name is Pat King. And like, when I talk about unlocking latent potential, like that whole concept, a lot of that, like, practically comes from Pat. And Pat took a guy that had never been in sales. I was doing revenue analysis at a big number three ERP company in the world. And now I'm moving into the renewable energy space because I was really passionate about it. But it was really like, how do I start? And like he was running channel sales, had run it at Apple and just said, hey, I believe in you. You've never done this, but I'm going to stretch you and give you like this responsibility that you frankly don't deserve, but like, let's go and let's see how you do. And so that came to mind. And then Dave Kyle, who's my former boss at QA Symphony, which was became Tricentis, just incredible leaders that treated people really well. From him, it's all about balancing grace and truth and how do you hold people accountable, but also pick people up in the event that something happens.
I love that you went to people instead of what company it was, because that resonates so much with me, like people that have really shaped and impacted my career, or you almost get a little lucky. Yeah, you can interview for like which companies and leaders you want to work for, but at the end of the day, some of it's kind of luck. Like you only learn so much in the interview process. So I had someone in my career, like Lizzie Rouleau, who I talked to one time in my interview process before joining Trip Actions, and she absolutely changed the trajectory of my career through her leadership and mentorship. So yeah, really cool to hear that.
That's great.
Brendan, I guess before we wrap, I'd love to hear a little bit more about Rev Partners, what you guys are doing, and what's got you so excited about what you're building there.
Yeah, I like this topic too. So in terms of the category that we serve is in revenue operations. We build a managed service model. And what we found in the market, and it's informed by my past experience. And so for a lot of like VC-backed high growth technology companies, this function is so critical. In terms of how do we think through how to drive a frictionless experience for the customer and also how to drive a frictionless experience for the company, meaning the sales, marketing, customer success team. And so that's really where we serve. In terms of who we serve, what we often find within that segment, within B2B organizations, is when you're in that, you know, what's called C to Series B round, it's oftentimes too cost prohibitive and too technical for you to hire a W-2 for it. And so what we're trying to say is there's a better way to approach that. And we provide experience, we provide a team, plug and play operators that come alongside you and accelerate your go-to-market initiatives through our RevOps as a service type of model. So it's not a question in our minds of if you need to do it, it's how. And at that stage, we found it's a much better bet, more cost-effective to have a resource that knows what they're doing versus the risk of trying to hire somebody that maybe too expensive at that stage of a company.
Got it. And if folks want to get in touch with you specifically or learn more about RevPartners, what's the best way to do that?
I'd say there's two ways. Thanks for asking. I mean, feel free to DM me directly. So my email is btollison, btollison at revpartners.io, or feel free to follow us on LinkedIn. We're pretty active on our LinkedIn page. And we'd be happy to connect with you. And you know, if we're not the right resource for you, we'd be happy to find somebody could help.
All right, I love it. And make sure you guys check out the RevPartners podcast as well. So really good stuff over there.
Yeah, but appreciate it. Yeah, Mike Brown's been on there, and we'd love to have you on there as well.
Yeah. All right, Brendan, thanks so much, man.
Thank you.